The Senate will be in order. Will everyone in the Senate and the galleries please rise for the prayer from the Senator from the 24th and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
Thank you. Good morning. The Torah is the first five books of Moses: Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. The Torah portion being studied this week by Jews around the world deals with the final three plagues that result in Israelites being granted their freedom from slavery under the Egyptian Pharaoh. The ninth and final plague was the plague of darkness. Darkness so thick that the people were immobilized and felt lost, even in their own familiar surroundings, for the whole of the 3 days the plague lasted. As we look to the lessons for today, we recognize that we too can get lost in the darkness, losing sight of what is really important in the midst of this familiar place, losing sight of the true needs for justice, for equality, for freedom and protections for all of the people of Missouri. Today's prayer is in the form of a poem from Alden Solovey with adaptations, entitled "For Political Leadership." God of history, we yearn for thoughtful leadership, for men and women of inspiration and insight, visionaries to build nations and communities in your image, stewards dedicated to justice, unafraid to face the challenges of our day, doing so without leading by fear, so that our cities and countries resonate with compassion and health, justice and mercy, kindness and peace. Bless our leaders with dedication and foresight, fortitude and imagination to solve the complex issues that threaten our future. May they lead us to a time when neighbors embrace and the communities thrive, a time when liberty and equality reign supreme. Source and shelter, grant safety and security to all nations and communities, so that truth and harmony will resound from the four corners of the earth. Let the light of wisdom shine brightly in the halls of power, a beacon of hope for every land and every people. And together we say, Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Good job. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Igel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session, 14th day, Monday, January 30th, 2017.
Senator from Cole, with purpose you rise.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
Senator from Cole has moved that further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as fully read. Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. Senator, you're recognized. Close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
All those in favor of the motion say aye. All those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Introduction of guests. Senator from the 8th.
Seventh.
Senator from the 7th.
Thank you, Mr. President. Visiting the Capitol today, if they would stand on my left and your right. Leading as the doctor of the day is Dr. Jim Kelly from Kansas City. Jim is a neighbor of mine. And with him is the Missouri Society of Anesthesiologists, and they are here to advocate on behalf of their profession in the state capitol, and I would ask everyone to make them feel welcome.
Let's please welcome the guests of the 7th to the chamber. Introduction of guest. Introduction of guest. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions, concurrent resolutions, introduction of bills. Senator from Boone, what purpose do you rise?
President, I have three bills.
Please send your bills forward.
No explanation needed.
Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 367, introduced by Senator Rowden, an act relating to power sport vehicle franchise practices.
Madam Secretary, please read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 368, introduced by Senator Rowden, an act relating to the disclosure of financial information submitted to the Department of Natural Resources.
Madam Secretary, please read the third bill.
Senate Bill number 369, introduced by Senator Rowden, an act relating to transportation of school children.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Lewis, what purpose do you rise?
I said I have two bills.
Please send your bills forward.
No explanation needed.
Thank you. Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 370, introduced by Senator Munslinger, an act relating to permits issued by the Department of Conservation.
Madam Secretary, please read the second bill.
Senate Joint Resolution number 16, introduced by Senator Munslinger, a joint resolution relating to the reauthorization of a sales tax dedicated to conservation purposes.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
I have a bill.
Please send your bill forward.
No explanation is needed, Mr. President.
Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 371, introduced by Senator Schaaf, an act relating to hemp extract.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Andrews. Purpose of your eyes.
Mr. President, I have a bill to introduce.
Please send your bill forward.
No explanation needed.
Thank you, Senator. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 372, introduced by Senator Hageman, an act relating to the existence of certain state administrative entities.
Introduction of bills. Senator from the Ninth.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill. No
Please
explanation
send your bill forward.
Necessary.
Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 373, introduced by Senator Curls, an act relating to the Missouri Senior Farmers Market Nutrition Program.
Senator, you care to explain?
No explanation necessary,
All
Mr.
Right,
President.
Thank you. Introduction of bills. Senator from the Fourth.
I have a bill. No
Send
explanation necessary.
Send your bill forward. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 374, introduced by Senator Hummel, an act relating to service dogs.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Johnson, purpose you rise.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have two bills.
Please send your bills forward.
No explanation is necessary.
Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 375, introduced by Senator Hoskins, an act relating to abortion.
Madam Secretary, please read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 376, introduced by Senator Hoskins, an act relating to the designation of a state dog.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Cape Girardeau, purpose your question.
The one needs explanation.
How many bills, Senator? Two bills. Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 377, introduced by Senator Wallingford, an act relating to child custody arrangements.
Madam Secretary, please read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 378, introduced by Senator Wallingford, an act relating to early childhood education.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Franklin, purpose you rise.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a bill.
Please send your bill forward.
There is no explanation necessary. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Senator. Madam Secretary, please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 379, introduced by Senator Schatz, an act relating to autocycles.
Introduction of bills. Senator from Callaway, purpose do you rise?
I have three bills.
Three bills. Send your three bills forward.
No explanation necessary.
Madam Secretary, please read the first bill.
Senate Bill number 380, introduced by Senator Riddle, an act relating to the Department of Transportation corridor.
Madam Secretary, read the second bill.
Senate Bill number 381, introduced by Senator Riddle, an act relating to reports issued by the state auditor.
Madam Secretary, read the third bill.
Senate Bill number 382, introduced by Senators Riddle and Munslinger, an act relating to maintaining Missouri State Parks.
Introduction of bills. Introduction of bills. Senator from the 23rd. Purpose you rise.
I have a bill.
Please send your bill forward.
No explanation required, Mr. President.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Madam Secretary, please read the first, or please read the bill.
Senate Bill number 383, introduced by Senator Eigel and Whelan, an act relating to joint and several liability.
Introduction of bills. From the first, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I seek unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Hearing no objection, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Joining us today are three individuals who either live in, work in, or live and work in my district. They are parks and recreation professionals. We have with us Michael Biedenstein, who works with Jefferson Barracks Park in St. Louis County in my district. We have Mickey McKee Kelsch and David Garth, who are both with the City of Webster Groves Parks and Recreation Department. And they are kind enough to join us here today. They are on your right and my left, Mr. President. Literally, my own children have played on the playgrounds and skated on the ice rink that these folks are kind enough to maintain, and they provide excellent services for tens of thousands of my constituents every year, and I'd appreciate it if the body could show our gratitude to them.
Would the guests of the first please rise, and would the body please make them welcome? Thank you. Introduction of bills. Introduction of bills. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you inquire for the Secretary if there are messages from the House? If so, I ask that they be read.
Madam Secretary, do we have messages from the House? We do not have messages from the House. Senator? Senator from Cole.
Would you inquire from the Secretary if there are messages from the Governor? If so, I ask that the reading be waived and they be printed in the journal.
Madam Secretary, do we have messages from the Governor? We do.
all other business be suspended so that the House and the Senate can... All of the business be suspended so that the House and Senate concurrent resolution number 4 may be read at length by the Secretary, and if no objections are made, be signed to end that it should become law and force into effect. Secretary, read the resolution.
Truly agreed to and finally passed. House concurrent resolution number 4, an act relating to disapproving the recommendations of the Missouri Citizens Commission on compensation for elected officials.
No objections being made. The concurrent resolution is so signed.
The Senator from Cole requests that the message from the Governor be printed in the Journal and been distributed. That has been done. Senator from Newton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that such gubernatorial appointments be returned to the Governor per his request. The withdrawal letter from the Governor has been distributed and is on the Governor's desk.
The Senator from Newton moved that such Governor appointments be returned to the Governor per his request. Does any senator desire to be heard? Hearing none. All those in favor? I'm sorry, Senator from Newton, you're recognized to close.
I close, Mr. President.
All those in favor, say aye. All those opposed, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The governor appointments will be returned to the governor per his request. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate bills for perfection, formal calendar, and I'd ask that you call the calendar.
Hearing no objections, the Senate will go to the formal perfection calendar. Senate Bill 21, the Senator from Phelps. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. On behalf of the Senator from Phelps, would you please place Senate Bill 21 on the informal calendar?
It will be placed on the informal calendar. Senate Bill 31, Senator from Barton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 31 be brought from the perfection calendar before the body for perfection.
The Senator from Barton moves that Senate Bill number 31 be taken up in perfection. As many as of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye. Those to the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator from Barton.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that Senate Bill 31 perfected and declared perfected and ordered printed.
The Senator from Barton moves that Senate Bill number 31 be declared perfected and ordered printed. Does the Senator care to explain the bill?
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a substitute. I'd like to send it forward.
Please send your substitute forward.
Thank you, Mr. President. The substitute, I'll explain very briefly because it's a simple change, and then I'll explain the bill that it changes.
Senator, I just need to change. Here, you send your substitute forward. Hearing no objection, the reading. Senator from Barton.
You're requesting a waiver of the reading.
Your request.
I move that for the adoption of the Senate committee of the Senate substitute.
Are you requesting a waiver of the reading?
Requesting a waiver of the reading. It will be distributed. And I will not close until it is.
Hearing no objections to the waiver of the reading will be waived.
Do you care to explain the substitute?
Do you care to explain the substitute?
Thank you, Mr. President. The substitute change is very simple. Somehow in the drafting of the language on page, well, let me just give you the subdivision, 490.715, 5.1 and 2, there is a phrase in there that says a plaintiff and or a patient. I'm not sure how that happened. We don't typically use and slash ors in legislative language. So that has been, the and slash or has been changed to a plaintiff or a patient. The prior language really was meaningless, and that corrects that that error. The underlying bill, Mr. President, is the bill we spent about 13 hours perfecting last year. We know it as a collateral source bill. The form that you have before you or will have before you if it hasn't been distributed is exactly what we passed out of the Senate last year, and then upon the governor's veto, passed out with an override vote of the veto last year out of the Senate. So it's language that I think all but one or maybe two senators have already seen and have actually voted on before. The reason for this legislation is because of what happened in 2010 with a judicial opinion that reversed a reform that was enacted by this body and the House of Representatives in 2005. There was considerable concern that numbers were being introduced in personal injury cases that did not reflect the actual value of medical expenses, which was exactly what was supposed to be represented. Language was drafted which required that to be the value of medical care when it was brought before the jury. However, in 2010, the judiciary decided that value didn't mean the actual cost of medical care, but was in fact some other value that was never billed or paid. This is to correct that, Mr. President. We have changed the value now to the act, or changed value to actual cost, so that when this is brought before a jury, when a injured party is supposed to be compensated for their medical cost, that is exactly what it represents, that they'll be compensated for the cost out of pocket. It's important, I think, for the members to understand that this is not the only aspect of a settlement offer once a defendant has been found responsible for damages. There are at least eight other items that the plaintiff attorney can bring before the jury and ask for compensation. Pain and suffering, that's negotiable, that's debatable, that's determined at court. Lost wages, once again, that's a projected number. It's arbitrated and worked out among the attorneys and the plaintiff and the defendant. Future compensation, another that is uncertain, but is actually brought to the jury as well in terms of the value of an injury. Earning capacity, there again, that's the attorneys have to work that out with their clients and come up with a number for earning capacity. Household services, in case those are required due to maybe a continuing nature of an accident. Mental anguish, I don't know how you put a value on that, but courts and juries are required to do that, and they do. Disability and disfigurement, once again, an arbitrated number that is adjudicated at court. And then future medical expenses, once again, another item that has to be projected and estimated and negotiated. But there is one item that is brought to the jury when we're adjudicating damages, and that is medical expenses. That item is not uncertain. It's very certain. It's exactly what was paid. And that this legislation simply says that when jury trials happen and awards are awarded, that fairness requires that those expenses be reported as they were expended. And so that's all that Senate Bill 31 does. It returns us back to this situation that was legislated in 2005 that says when a jury is being presented with the damages from a plaintiff, that those damages, when we're talking about medical expenses, we're talking about the actual cost of medical care that was expended for that injury. I would be happy, Mr. President, to answer any questions. Otherwise, I renew my motion.
Does any senator desire to be heard on the adoption of the Senate substitute? Senator from the first, purpose you rise.
To inquire of the senator from Barton.
Senator from Barton, you yield?
I yield.
You may proceed, Senator.
Senator.
Good afternoon, Senator. Yeah.
I still haven't grown accustomed.
The hours are running together after last night, aren't they, Senator?
That's correct.
We were here until close to midnight last night. The last time this bill was on the floor, we were here until 6 a.m. Let's just hope that we see a repeat of neither of those occurrences today. How's that?
I would just as soon not as well. Yeah,
I will do my best, Senator. And in fairness, last time the proceedings were indeed protracted far beyond what I think either you or I would have preferred. Sometimes that's just how things play out, but we were
successful.
We did our best. We would have proceeded to have succeeded in 4 hours rather than 11, but sometimes that's just how it goes.
That's right.
I will say that the last change that we made to this bill last year before perfection, I thought was an important one, not only in protecting the rights of accident victims, but also in making this bill be one that I think courts can understand and implement with some degree of sensibility. Now, I still have concerns about the underlying merits of the bill, but the last provision that was taken out last year pertained to future damages.
Exactly.
And when you start talking about collateral sources for future damages, it gets pretty nebulous pretty fast. And so I do think we made it a better bill, and I appreciate the effort that you put into last year in getting it there.
Well, I appreciate your work on it with us as well, Senator. As you said, it was protracted, and there was a lot of talk as well as debate on the floor,
right,
because it did take time for us to resolve that, and I appreciate your assistance in helping us resolve it, and that's why the bill was filed again this year exactly that way, because it had taken us a lot of work to get it to that point.
Yeah. So I now have the substitute, and I believe I've identified the spot where the one change from last year's legislation can be found. It's on page 2, line 10. I'm sorry, line 11. And instead of saying parties may introduce evidence of the actual cost of the medical care or treatment rendered to a plaintiff and or a patient, we now say plaintiff or a patient.
Yes. If you read the and or and think about it, it means nothing.
Right.
It means or.
Yeah. I'll say it this way. I'm not aware of any issue that presents. If others express concern about that, I will be the first to let you know. I cannot fathom that we're going to spend 11 hours over the difference between an and or on one hand and or an or on the other hand, Senator.
That's right. Thanks, Senator.
So going to the merits of the bill, my concern has been and continues to be the difference between value and actual cost. And I know that you have crafted this in a way so as to try to ensure to the greatest extent possible that actual cost encompasses everything that the plaintiff might reasonably recover if it's either something that they have been billed for or a third party has paid for or an amount that is outstanding and yet it remains due at the time of trial or bills that have not been paid at the time of trial.
That's correct.
I remain nonetheless concerned that by making this change that there will be real money to real people that under current law would inure to the benefit of the plaintiff that under this bill would result in inuring to the benefit of the wrongdoer or the wrongdoer's insurance carrier. And that is my concern with the bill. But that concern does not cause me to want to come to the floor today with one or more any amendments to the bill, nor does it cause me to want to take 11 hours to get where we need to get to on this. That being said, you noted most of the folks that are in the Senate today were in the Senate when this was here last year. Of the new faces, all but one of the new members of the Senate voted on this bill last year in the House. I will note that most of those members probably didn't have the same opportunity to amend the bill that they would have had they been in the Senate. But I think we have only one member who has never voted on this bill before, the senator from the 23rd, and I don't know, maybe he has lots of questions. Maybe he's just fine with it. I don't know. That's up to him. But it seems to me that this bill has already had a lot of process in this body, and I am personally disinclined to attempt to effectuate further amendment to the bill. That said, I do suspect that other members of the body may have questions, and I'm happy to be inquired of by members, but I'm not the proceedings were plenty protracted last year, don't you think, Senator?
I think they were, Senator. I think it was it took us quite a while to work out the differences and at least resolve some of them to the extent that we were able to get to a vote in this body. And you know, obviously the differences of opinion on the foundation of this bill may not have changed for everyone.
Right.
The arguments are pretty much still the same. And, you know, I'm happy to continue to work through those arguments and make it clear to the members of the body that maybe either have forgotten or weren't here for that debate. But I appreciate you being willing to take inquiries, because there probably will be members that want to inquire of you.
But I just note that Groundhog Day is still at least a couple weeks away, and we probably don't need to have Groundhog Day altogether on this bill here. It's not even February yet, Senator.
That's right.
But in any event, I appreciate that last year we weren't exactly able to get to yes, but we were at least able to get to a point where we could agree to disagree and cast our votes and move on to the next issue. And I have some hope and confidence that this bill will not cause the same great delay in the proceedings of this body that it did last year.
Thank you, Senator.
We'll do our best.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
Is there any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire of the senator from the first.
Senator from the first, do you yield?
I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
Thank you, Senator. I think Groundhog Day is Thursday, isn't it?
Is it really?
I think so.
This week?
Not for sure, but I'm pretty sure.
The February 2nd, I didn't
like
realize
I've
Groundhog
been there before.
Day. What's that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know it could be as early as February 2nd.
You know, I voted for this bill last year.
Yeah.
But then this year I had former Representative Jim Avery.
Sure.
Came to me. He's on the State Labor Commission. And so he's dealt with many, many cases. And he's also got his law degree.
Yeah.
And so we had a talk about this, and he explained to me the effect of this bill. He explained to me what it really is, and I didn't truly understand it, but I'd like to just clarify, make sure that you think that I do understand it.
Sure.
Because you do. Now, right now, if you have two people with the same injury,
yep,
one of them has insurance, and one of them does not have insurance.
Right.
They both go and they get identical treatment for the identical injury, and it has the identical gross charges,
right.
Let's say $100,000.
Sure.
The person who does not have insurance, when they go to court, the jury will be told that the gross charges were $100,000.
Yep.
And right now, before the passage of Senate Bill 31, the person with insurance is told, most likely told, both that the gross charges are $100,000 and that insurance paid in full at $30,000. Is that correct?
The statute currently reads, the defendant may introduce evidence that some other person other than the plaintiff has paid those amounts. The evidence shall not identify any person having made such payments, which is to say,
so they're
the jury won't
pieces.
Hear that it's insurance that's paid for it, but they'll know that they'll understand what's been paid.
So they'll get both pieces of information.
Right.
Okay,
right.
But now under the bill, they don't get to know the 100,000 number. They just
correct.
Only get the 30,000 number, right?
Arguably. Yes, I think that's right. The way the definition of actual cost breaks it out is to say that actual cost is the sum of money not to exceed the dollar amounts paid by or on behalf of a plaintiff, so either out-of-pocket cost to the plaintiff or what an insurer pays, and or a patient whose care is at issue, plus any remaining dollar amount necessary to satisfy the financial obligation for medical care or treatment. So actual costs cannot exceed those two. And that gets into the argument of proponents of the bill, which is that in current law, when we say value of rather than actual cost, in theory it can be a different number, and sometimes it is. But the concern is, we don't want to have two similarly situated people who arrive at different outcomes simply because one of them happens to have health insurance.
But am I saying it correctly that right now the jury gets to hear both the $100,000 and the $30,000 that they settled for, and that if we pass this bill, they no longer get to hear the $100,000, they just only get to hear the $30,000? I mean, that is what the bill does. Is that correct?
I think that's how it plays out, yes.
Okay. So, former Representative Avery told me that prejudices the jury, that, you know, normally they'll pay, the jury will award economic damages, and then they will award non-economic damages.
Right.
Now, it seems to me that the economic damages are, you know, some of them that the senator from Barton listed are pretty straightforward, you know, lost wages, earning capacity,
right,
household services.
De rigueur, yes.
Future medical expenses, yep. I mean, those can all be argued over. But.
Well, but future medical expenses can be a point of contention, and that was the one change in the bill that we fought for and got last year, was getting future medical expenses out of the bill, because when you get into collateral sources for future medical expenses, like I say, it gets
but
nebulous quickly.
But now, you know, there's no way to make this exactly equitable on the payment of medical expenses because of the fact that there are ERISA plans and then there are non-ERISA plans.
Yep.
But
that was another issue we talked about last year.
Generally speaking, we've done the best we can on the medical expenses. It is that they're going to get paid. They're going to get paid in the settlement pretty much either way. And it is the non-economic damages, which is the pain and suffering, mental anguish, that is what I'm concerned about here, because oftentimes juries set the non-economic damages somewhere in the range of the medical expenses, don't they? They don't have anything else to go on.
They get an instruction that gives them, I think it's fair to say, they get an instruction that gives them quite a bit of license.
Right. Okay, so they get these instructions and it gives them quite a bit of room. Now, basically what we have here is we have two people, identical injuries, identical gross charges, and right now, the jury gets to hear the gross charges on both of them, and they're the same. But under this new law, they're only going to get to hear like $100,000 versus $30,000. Now, I distributed to everyone's desk a couple of articles on anchoring, and it's on your desk.
Yep.
The first one says anchoring, and it's a Wikipedia definition. It's got my name on it. Looks like this. You want to glance over just so that you have it.
Yes.
The other one is measures of anchoring and estimation tasks. This article is from Princeton University and the University of California at Berkeley. And these two authors are talking about measures of anchoring and estimation tasks. And if you look on the second page, Senator.
Yes.
Right here in the middle, measures of anchoring, the first sentence says,
yep.
It says, anchoring effects are generally believed to be large and reliable. That's the first sentence. Now, what is anchoring? Anchoring, according to Wikipedia, is a cognitive bias that describes the common human tendency to rely too heavily on the first piece of information offered, or the anchor, when making decisions.
Yep.
During decision-making, anchoring occurs when individuals use an initial piece of information to make subsequent judgments. Okay, now how does this enter into the discussion today? Well, I'd like you to turn in this one article on anchoring in about the middle, a little past the middle, it says page 7.
Yep.
Okay, a little past the middle, it'll say there's one that says anchoring effect, you are not so smart, page 7 of 17. It's of the big packet.
The big packet.
Yeah,
got
the big
it.
Packet. Yeah, that one. There you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, got it. I'm following.
Okay, now there's this paragraph at the upper half of the page, and I just want to read this paragraph and kind of go through it with you. There are many examples of anchoring in here, but this is a really good one, and I just think that the members of the body would appreciate it. It says, the anchoring effect can slip in unannounced. Drazen Prelek and Dan Ariely conducted an experiment at MIT. We're not talking, junk science here. We're talking the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in 2006, where they had students bid on items in a bizarre auction. Ariely explained in his book, Predictably Irrational, that the researchers would hold up a bottle of wine or a textbook or a cordless trackball and then describe in detail how awesome it was. Then each student had to write down the last two digits of their social security number as if it was the price of the item. If the last two digits were 11, then the bottle of wine was priced at $11. If the two numbers were 88, the cordless trackball was $88. After they wrote down the pretend price, then they bid. Now, the results were interesting. It says, sure enough, the anchoring effect scrambled their ability to judge the value of the items. People with high social security numbers paid up to 346% more than those with low numbers. People with numbers from 80 to 99 paid on average $26 for the trackball, while those with 0 to 19 paid around $9. Now, there are many other examples of anchoring in these documents. This is a well-known psychological thing that human beings are subject to.
Absolutely.
So I've got to ask you, if you have two identical juries and we're talking about two different patients, two different plaintiffs, one who has insurance and one who doesn't have insurance, and one jury is presented with $100,000 as the gross medical charges, and the other jury is only able to see the $30,000, do you think that anchoring will come into play as the juries decide how much to award in non-economic damages?
Yeah, I mean that's you have hit the issue precisely, and the anchoring phenomenon is very real. Candidly, it is put into play in settlement negotiations in these very kinds of cases every day.
Well, there are several examples in here that are really interesting. Like a person goes into a clothing shop and they put on the jacket and there's a tag there that says $1,000, and then the salesman says, "By the way, it's on sale for $400 today." Well, it turns out that even if a person's not normally willing to pay $400 for a jacket, that they'd be much more likely to buy the jacket for the $400, given that they've been anchored to the $1,000, that they saw on the price tag. They'll think, oh my gosh, I'm saving $600, when it's all an illusion. And it seems to me that if we care about justice, if we want two people who have exactly identical injuries to go to court and get the same non-economic damages, which can be many, many thousands of dollars, and we allow the anchoring effect to have such a dramatic difference, one jury gets to hear $100,000, the other jury only gets to hear $30,000, we have destroyed the justice that our court system is to provide. And Representative Avery explained this to me. He didn't explain the anchoring. He just explained that the juries are prejudiced. And I can see it now. And so that's why I'm planning to talk about this bill a little bit with the various members.
Well, it's certainly not something we do idly. And that's part of the reason the discussion went as long as it did last year, because you're talking about real money, and it's real money for people who in many cases have been very, very badly injured. I mean, we're talking about quadriplegics, paraplegics, people who have had botched medical procedures, people who have had crush injuries, people who have had some hideous disfigurements, burn victims. I mean, you're talking about people who, in many of these cases, are going to be living the rest of their life with severe disfigurement or disability, and some of these people are quite young, quite young.
Well, you know, I know that many times hospitals, physicians, caregivers, different providers, they accept a fraction of their gross charges for payment from insurance companies. It may be half, a third, you know, three-tenths. And I also know that some of these people rack up medical charges of hundreds of thousands of dollars, not just 100,000. And so if we allow a case where somebody has injuries of, say, $300,000 or $400,000, and somebody else has the same injuries, but the jury only gets to hear three-tenths or a third of the amount, I'm sorry, but the justice dispensed as a result of anchoring is totally inequitable.
And yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, you get two people with the same injury. One has insurance, one doesn't, and you get radically different outcomes, and not just as to how the medical expenses are handled.
I mean, as it is, at least the jury gets to hear the gross charges on both cases, as it is. And the one who has insurance, you know, the other side gets to present the paid amount, you know, by the insurance company, but at least they get to hear the gross charges, so at least the anchoring effect is somewhat muted, and that's a good thing. But, you know, it seems to me that justice would require, when calculating the pain and suffering, that we not just totally skew the paying field for the benefit of somebody. Somebody's benefiting here, and it's probably the insurance companies and the, you know, the business community, you know, at the expense of liberty and our right to get our grievances addressed.
Senator, I am going to make a very unusual request. Unfortunately, I've been apprised of a situation that I need to step off the floor and attend to very quickly. If you'll excuse me,
okay.
Senator.
Thank you.
I'll be back as quickly as I can.
Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
May I inquire of the senator from the second, please?
The senator from the second. Senator from the second, do you yield from an inquiry from the senator from Buchanan?
I do.
Oh.
You may proceed, Senator.
Senator, were you listening to my inquiry of the senator from the first, even at all?
I a little bit of it. I was pulled off the floor. I met our future director of the DNR, but I heard some of it. Yes.
Well, the thing is that it's kind of interesting that the senators from the first and the second are the two lawyers in the chamber.
Yes.
And you being a lawyer and a physician,
yes.
you have insight far above and beyond many of us. But I asked the senator from the first to verify my perception of what the state of, you know, the law is now and what it would be under Senate Bill 31.
Right.
And as it is now, just to verify with you, the other lawyer in the chamber,
sure.
If I have two plaintiffs And the two plaintiffs have identical injuries, identical treatment, let's say identical gross charges of $100,000, but one of them has insurance and the other one does not have insurance. When they go to court right now, the one who does not have insurance, the jury hears the $100,000 in gross charges. That's what they hear.
Mm-hmm.
The one who does not have, who does have insurance right now, the jury hears the $100,000, but they also get to hear the actual cost, the $30,000, right now. And under the bill, we would be taking away the jury of the person with insurance hearing the $100,000. So as a result of this bill, if you have two people, identical injuries, identical gross charges of $100,000, the jury in the case of the person with no insurance is going to hear $100,000. The case of the jury in the person who has insurance is only going to hear $30,000, given that those are the numbers. Okay, is that correct, as your understanding of the bill goes?
Sure, I believe that is correct.
Okay, now, I handed out a couple of articles on anchoring. You're familiar with the psychological effect known as anchoring, aren't you? Okay, well, let me tell you what
it
is.
Yeah, yes, now that I read
well,
this paragraph.
This article, which comes from Princeton and UC Berkeley, talks about the measures of anchoring, and on the second page in the middle, under measures of anchoring, the first sentence says, anchoring effects are generally believed to be large and reliable. And this article talks about basically the effects of anchoring, you know, and how to measure the effect of anchoring. And the thing is the other article talks about many examples. I put three articles together here, you know, many examples. Here, I'll just pick one from the next to the last page of this bigger group. It's talking about anchoring bias and restaurant wait time. I thought it was kind of interesting. It says, have you ever added your name to a restaurant waiting list, been told the wait was 30 minutes, and ended up waiting longer? Says, imagine two parties visiting a restaurant that is running a 15-minute wait time for seating. In scenario one, the host tells the customer their wait time will be 15 minutes. In scenario two, the host tells the customer their wait time will be 30 minutes. In both, the time for seating begins to approach 25 minutes. In all likelihood, the party who was told 15 minutes has been waiting in frustration, checking their watch, and perhaps awaiting an opportunity to voice frustration. Meanwhile, the second party heads to their table, pleased that their wait was 5 minutes shorter than expected. Okay, there are several examples. The best one, if you look in the middle of the packet, is on page 7 of 17. And it'll say page 7 of 17, anchoring effect, you are not so smart at the top. Yeah, you got it right there.
Yep.
Now, that top article, it was a study conducted at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. I just wanted you to know, we're not talking junk science here. We're talking the real deal. Anyway, they did this test where they had students, they looked at an item, let's say they looked at a cordless trackball. So they talked about the trackball and how great it was. Then they had the students write down the last two digits of their social security numbers on a piece of paper with a dollar sign to represent the cost of the trackball. They said, just write this down, write this number down as if it was the cost. Then they had the students bid on how much they would be willing to pay for the trackball. And it turns out there was up to 346% more when the Social Security numbers were high than when they were low. And it says, People with numbers from 80 to 99 paid on average $26 for the trackball, while those with 00 to 19 paid around $9. Okay, so, you know, I guess what this is an example of the powerful, powerful effect of anchoring. And so now how am I relating this to Senate Bill number 31? I think you can see. Under Senate Bill 31, what we're doing is we're taking away from the jury of the person who has insurance the gross charges, and we're only giving them the lower number. And the jury, now you have two people, one who's going to hear $100,000, one who's going to hear $30,000. Tell me, do you think the effect of anchoring is going to have an effect on how they calculate the non-economic damages?
Sure. I have a question in your example. So the person without insurance, he's presented by the hospital with the bill for $100,000.
Right.
Did he pay the bill?
No. The insurance company paid the bill.
This is the 100,000 person without insurance.
And the person without insurance, the company paid all 100,000. Now, the thing is right now, the jury gets to hear both pieces of information. And they still have to come up with a value to award in court for the non-economic damages. The non-economic damages are the major way of, you know, providing some justice here. Not, I mean, pain and suffering, it's a very important piece here. And what I'm saying to you is that if you take away that gross number, such that now the two juries hear these two different numbers, the jury is going to be anchored to those numbers when calculating the non-economics.
One thing I would remember, I heard part of the inquiry between you and the senator from the first, in which he talked about catastrophic injuries, serious burns, and so on. Remember that in many of these cases, part of the economic damages are the future loss of income and, of course, the future medical bills. So what you're talking about is only the actual incurred and billed medical bills, but it's an important issue nonetheless.
Well, the other things are kind of like, they're going to haggle over those, but the numbers are going to be probably fairly similar.
Well,
and the jury gets to hear both of those cases. I mean, there's no difference.
And those are the big numbers, the future medical and lost wages and so on. Those are the big numbers. But this is an important issue too, Senator. What I would say is this. The person without insurance who pays his own bill of $100,000 gets to admit into evidence the $100,000. I think that's fair.
And then the jury comes up with the non-economic damages, but they're anchored to the $100,000.
But because that $100,000 someone actually paid, the patient plaintiff. On the other hand, if the patient has insurance, the $30,000 that the insurance company paid, or that the insurance company paid part and the patient has co-pay and deductible, that's the number someone actually paid, and I think that's fair too. I think what the senator from Barton is getting at with his bill is that in the case where no one actually paid the $30,000 and the $100,000, I sometimes call funny money number, that's just the hospital's, you know, kind of, well, you stubbed your toe, the bill's $10,000, but they only allow $800.
But, Senator,
That's inappropriate to admit that number.
Senator,
can I finish it? And that there is a situation of unjust enrichment in that case.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about the paying the medical expenses.
Okay, I mean, we'll get back to anchoring.
The thing is that I will freely admit that the insurance company only paid, let's say, $30,000.
Right.
Versus the $100,000 that, you know, is going to be paid by the defendant, and that there will be a lien for all $100,000. It will get paid. I mean, in the case of a person with no insurance. Those providers will have placed a lien, and they'll get their money, and the jury will award enough to pay that.
Okay.
But the jury now, once that's paid, however that is...
If that 100 is going to get paid, then that's an appropriate...
That's number. That. But now they have to award the non-economic damages, which, as you know, can be on the same order of magnitude as the economic damages.
Well, I think what you're alluding to is that sometimes in this personal injury world, there is a formula that cases get settled for X amount of actual damages. And, you know, that's a completely different thing because non-economic damages aren't supposed to be some formulaic multiply actual damages by X. They're really supposed to be somehow a measure of pain and suffering associated with the injury. If lawyers and insurance adjusters have developed some sort of shorthand that isn't appropriate, Senator, that's a different issue.
But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about by whatever mechanism the jury uses. Well, I don't care what the mechanism is. They look at it, they go, huh, they're going to be anchored to the numbers that they are given in court. And one jury is going to be anchored to 100,000 or maybe it's 500,000. And the other jury is going to be anchored to 30,000, or maybe it's 130,000. I don't know what it is, but the bottom line of it is that the juries are going to come up with non-economic damages that are going to be, I mean, you know, hundreds of percentages apart.
Well, I thought the whole issue being addressed in this bill and the issue we've discussed in the past here is what is the fair... What is the fair compensation for the economic damages? Now, you're bringing in this non-economic damage concept in anchoring. I see your point. I see your point.
I just want to make sure you see my point because...
I see your point.
Because, see, right now, Senator, the jury in the case of the person with insurance, they get to hear both numbers. I mean, I'm not saying they shouldn't hear the 30,000. I'm just saying that if you want justice, if you want to have equity in the courts... When the juries need to at least not be anchored to these two disparate numbers in the case of identical injuries.
I think the challenge of determining what are fair non-economic damages, that's got to be a challenge to any jury.
Raised any concern in your mind about this at all through looking at this through the lens of anchoring?
Well, again, I think the whole point of the law surrounding compensation for economic damages, including the collateral source rule and the Senator from Barton's reform of the Senate collateral source rule, concerns fair compensation for economic damages. I think non-economic damages are a different issue. Now, you're probably right that if a jury sees a falsely inflated funny money hospital ER number, they might be anchored in an upward direction. No question. I think that's probably true.
And so I'm just simply asking.
But I don't think we should refrain from any modification of the collateral source rule, because again, collateral source rule gets at what's the fair compensation for the economic damages,
but
not
Senator,
the economic
amount. I'm not asking you to take away that information. I'm saying that give both pieces of information so that you don't anchor when they calculate the non-economic damages. And that's what I'm trying to tell you is that we're talking a significant number here. I mean, we're not talking about just, you know, a little bit. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars that they award in non-economic damages. I mean, to anchor the two juries disparately is like really, really bad.
Well, you know, Senator, if there are two houses side by side and one house is worth $100,000, the buyer paid $100,000 for it 2 weeks ago. Person next door bought a house for $30,000, and which he bought 2 weeks ago. And a tornado comes through and levels the two homes. The compensation for the total, and let's say they were identical homes. They were in every way, shape, and form. But one of the buyers way overpaid, and the other got a really good deal. the appropriate compensation, in my mind, I think in the mind of the author of this legislation, is that 30 is appropriate in the one case and 100 is appropriate in the other case. And
I totally agree.
That's how I see it. And I think we talk about inflated health care costs, the $20 aspirin, the ER visit for, you know, where you get a bill for $5,000 and your insurance says the allowable is $800. I think the appropriate compensation for that is what someone's willing to pay for that service. What is a fair price in any context? What a fair buyer and a free buyer and a free seller under no compulsion to buy or sell arrive at? And
I think your idea is really good, Senator. You give a really good example. Unfortunately, when the tornado comes and takes out the house, there's no non-economic damages, really. I mean, no pain and suffering involved there. But, you know, it gives me an idea, a way to actually to do this would be to have a bifurcated trial whereby the economic damages are calculated for the plaintiff, and then give the jury the information of the gross charges so that you wouldn't be anchoring them to different numbers when they can't calculate the non-economic damages. How about that? I mean, that way you would have a more just and fair system there. What do you think?
I'm not sure I follow you.
Well, let the jury hear the number of the economic damages using the Senator from Barton's formula and calculate the economic damages. And then, once they have done that, bring the jury back, let them hear the value of the gross charges, like they did in this other guy, and then say, okay, now that you know what the gross charges are, you go and you calculate the non-economic damages. Now you've got a system where the jury is not going to be anchored to this other number. They're going to probably come up with a much more fair and equitable result. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that gross number in many cases in our healthcare system, and that's mostly what we've been talking about here, is just a funny money number that just has no meaning. And I think in a context where it has no meaning, there's no reason that ought to go to a jury.
I don't disagree with you as far as calculating the economic damages. Unfortunately, it's the non-economic damages that are so gigantic that you're going to be anchoring them apart, and that leads to an unjust result. I mean, at least I think you see my point.
But why can't other things be brought into evidence as to what the non-economic damages are, like the plaintiff's testimony as to how much pain or suffering he experienced, how much Vicodin he had to take, how many days off work he had to take, although there's economic element to that too, but how much time he had to take off to recover reflects your non-economic damages. And so on. He wasn't able to engage in this and that hobby. All that can come into evidence, Senator. I understand what you're saying. When someone's shown this big gross charge number, that might have an anchoring effect, as you suggest.
But okay, there are
a lot of other things that go into that testimony as to what the non-economic damages
are. I do admit that. That's exactly right. I don't want to belabor this with you. I just want you, as you listen to this debate, think about this anchoring effect and whether or not you think that we're doing the right thing here. I mean, that's what I really want you to think. And at the end of the day, you have to be responsible for your vote on this bill. Maybe we could, as we go through this process, maybe we could think of a way around this, like the mechanism that I suggested. I mean, I don't want to go home tonight knowing that I allowed this bill to go through that's going to create an unjust situation, or at least make it more unjust. Yeah, I mean, it may be that since right now we tell them the discounted amount and we tell them the gross amount, that juries, you know, give more than the discounted amount. But it also may be that juries already give the discounted amount since they already get to hear it. You know, they get to hear that. So what really worries me is the non-economic damages. And so thank you for the inquiry. I really appreciate it, Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
To inquire of the senator from St. Francois.
St. Francois. Senator from San Francois is not in the chamber. Sergeant Arms, would you summons the senator? Senator from San Francois, do you yield to the senator from Buchanan?
President, I do.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Senator, thank you for taking my inquiry.
Senator. How are you doing this afternoon?
Have you been listening to any of the discussion that I've had with the senators from the first or the second?
I heard a little bit about it. We're talking about collateral source, correct?
And do you understand my concern here and how anchoring plays a role in the calculation of the non-economic damages? Anchoring, yes. Let me explain to you. I want to make sure that we know exactly what we're talking about here. Right now, Senator, if you have two people with identical injuries, and so they have identical treatment, and the providers bill identical gross charges. Let's just say one of them does not have insurance, and let's say the gross charges for both of them are $100,000. And then the other one that does have insurance has gross charges of $100,000, but also they discounted it down to, say, $30,000. Well, right now, when these two people go to trial, the person with no insurance, the jury gets to hear, it was $100,000. That's what they get to hear, the gross charges. They don't have insurance. Right now, under the law as it exists, the person who has insurance, they go to trial, they get to hear the $100,000, but they also get to hear that it was paid for at $30,000. So they get both pieces of information. Now, under the bill, they would not get to hear the $100,000 anymore. They'd only get to hear $30,000. So you would have two people, identical injuries, identical treatment, and identical gross charges, but the jury in the case of the person with no insurance gets to hear $100,000, but in the case of the person with insurance gets to hear $30,000. So that's what the bill does.
I follow that very,
okay,
very well.
Now, I've distributed onto your desk a couple of articles on anchoring. I mean, anchoring is a well-known psychological effect that's been studied, well-studied. I've heard about it for many years. It basically has to do with when you give out a number, that number stays in a person's mind and their subsequent decisions are affected by it. So this one handout that's pretty thick, it's, look in the middle of it, a little past the middle, and you'll come to a page that says page 7 of 17. Okay? Right there. Yeah, you got it. Okay, on the upper half of that page is an example of a study that they did at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And basically, this is just a great example of anchoring. And so what they did was they held up an object, and it could have been a bottle of wine or a book or a trackball. So let's say it was a trackball. So they held it up and they talked about how great it was. Then they said to the students, write down the last two digits of your social security number as if it were the price of the item, the trackball. So if their social security number ended in 88, they wrote $88. And if it ended in, say, 19, they wrote $19. Then they had, after they did that, they had the students bid how much they would pay for the trackball. Well, it turned out that those students who had low numbers on their social security number bid a lot less for the trackball than those students that had high digits on their social security number.
But you're getting psychosomatic about all this.
No, it's not psychosomatic. It's psychological. It's a natural human phenomenon. It's well known to car salesmen. Use it all the time. There was another example about if you go into a clothing store and you put on a jacket and there's a tag that says $1,000, and the salesman says, today it's on sale for $400. The person is much more likely to buy it than if it just said $400. Because most people won't pay $400 automatically for a coat. But when they think they're getting $600 off, they will.
I remember those from my days in marketing and
retail. So you've heard about this from when you were in marketing class?
Yes, yes.
Okay, now let's apply this knowledge to Senate Bill 31. You know, I know that the senator from Barton is trying to make a more equitable determination in court of the economic damages getting paid for the medical expenses, right? But unfortunately, if you do what the senator from Barton has recommended, and you have identical injuries, identical gross charges, but the jury, one jury gets to hear $100,000 and the other jury gets to hear $30,000, when they calculate the non-economic damages, the pain and suffering, they're going to get wildly different numbers just because they have been anchored to two very distant numbers.
But under the current law, let's say both get to start out, as you say, at the $100.
And then the other side gets to also know how much they discounted it for.
So they do get to know the discount. Do they get to know how much money they paid in premiums over the period of time into that policy as well? I mean, that's a cost that they've incurred to have that insurance.
They don't get to know the premiums. They are not told how much the premiums were, but at least they are told the gross charges and the discounted amount right now. That's what they're told. That's what they're given under the law. The jury, if you have insurance, is told the gross charges, and the amount that the insurance company settled for. The person who doesn't have insurance is told the gross charges. But under Senate Bill 31, one jury would be anchored way up here, and the other jury would be anchored way down there when they calculate the non-economic damages. Another way to say it is not telling them that number prejudices the jury. That's what they're doing.
But your biggest concern is the factor that when there's non-economic damages being awarded, it's generally based upon a percentage of the actual cost of damages.
I'm not saying that because, you know, that it isn't a formula. But the jury has to have some mechanism.
If you're going to talk about mental approach to this, that it's going to be a mental approach, that the jury is going to look at this based upon a percentage of what the actual damages were when they do award non-economical
damages.
Well,
that's just, wouldn't you, if you were on the jury? I mean, you would. I would. I would have to say, I got to have some basis for deciding what the non-economic damages are. And in this case, if you take away the gross charge information from the jury number two, you are now anchoring those two juries at very different numbers, and so you're going to come up with unjust calculations by the two juries of non-economic damages.
But the bottom line is what we're trying to accomplish here with this bill, and I'm listening intently with the debate because I want to make sure we get it right, is that we want to award that individual the actual cost out of their pocket and any non-economic damages that go along with it.
Right, but when
because we don't want them to have a double benefit of having the insurance and then still get paid the higher amount on the higher side.
Right. I'm okay with that. I mean, we're telling them both pieces of information now, and the jury can do what's right. They can pay just the cost if they want. But it's the non-economic damages. When they calculate the pain and suffering, that is where the problem lies. You're creating an unjust situation. You're making it so that the juries has been perjured, biased by anchoring them to these different numbers. And that's my objection here. I'm very worried. And, it was former Representative Jim Avery that came and explained this to me. He goes, you're biasing the jury. You're making it so that justice is not served. And I can see it. It's as clear as crystal to me. And I at least wanted to make sure, Senator, that before you vote on this bill, just think about what I've said. Just think about it. That's all I'm asking you to do. Think about the effect of anchoring as the two juries contemplating exactly the same injury come up with the non-economic damages, and how if you take away the one piece of information, then it's an unfair situation.
I follow your thought process. I just want to make sure that we're not impeding an opportunity to bring possibly jury awards into line with what they really
should. Well, I'm not opposed, but the thing is, we don't have any evidence now that juries are awarding people way more for their economic damages than the cost. They get told the same amount. Have you heard any data such as that?
No, I have not.
Yeah, but now you can see how we're creating a situation here that's bad based upon good science that you were taught when you were in management school. I mean, this is a big deal. We're talking about people who have been severely injured, and we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars in equity here. Well, and I just want you to know this before you vote. That's all I'm asking.
Well, I guess of all the conversation we had last year, this never came up last year when we discussed
this. No, and I didn't have Representative Avery come and sit me down and explain it to me either. But now I understand it, and I just don't want to go home tonight saying to myself, I didn't do the right thing. I didn't talk about this. I didn't try to at least educate my colleagues as to what's going on.
Do you have a solution on how to mitigate or modify that we can get accomplished what we want to do with this bill but not impede the jury award for non-economical damages?
Well, as we were standing here talking, I suggested that we have the jury calculate the economic damages and then bring the jury back, tell them the gross charges, and then have them calculate the non-economic damages. I mean, that would at least be a two-step trial where you could at least, not bias the jury in the one case and not bias them in the second case, on the non-economics. I mean, that would be a mechanism, but I don't have the ability to write up such an amendment. I don't know how to do it. But that would at least create more justice and equity in our court system. Anyway, please think about it before you vote on this bill. And as you go home tonight after voting on the bill, I want you to know that you voted the right way and that, we're not doing something to make it worse, okay?
I give you my word that I will make sure that I...
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President...
Senator from Buchanan.
If I could inquire the senator from the 4th.
Senator from the 4th. The senator from the 4th is not in the chamber. Sergeant of the Arms, would you please summons the senator from the 4th? Senator from the 4th, the Senator from Buchanan, is asking for an inquiry. Do you yield?
I do, Mr. President.
You may proceed, Senator from Buchanan.
Thank you for taking my inquiry, Senator. I hope I'm not disturbing you from something really important.
I was going over your bill.
But, you know, there isn't a whole lot that's more important than how people go to court and get justice from our court system. So I hope that you feel pretty good about at least talking about it.
I would love you to. This is our first time inquiring of each other, isn't
Senator,
it?
Senator, how many times yet have you looked up to the wall up there and seen the words, free and fair discussion will ever be found the firmest friend to truth? Those words really moved me the first time I was in the chamber, and I agree with them. So I want to talk with you about what we're doing here with this bill. Do you
Please.
Understand what we're doing here?
I think so, but in very, very layman's terms, and maybe you can enlighten me a little more. I was just in the office going over some of these with my staff.
Okay, well,
so
you
more...
know, it's basically right now under the law, if you have two people and they have identical injuries, let's say they're in a car accident or they fell off a ski lift or whatever it is, and they have identical injuries, and they go and they have identical treatments, and as a result of those treatments, they have identical gross charges, okay?
Right.
Let's say the gross charges are $100,000, okay? But the difference between the two of them, one of them has no insurance, and the other one has insurance, and let's just say that their insurance agreed to pay, instead of $100,000, let's say their insurance paid $30,000 to pay the claim. Okay. So these are the two cases. Identical injuries. They're injured the same. Okay. Under the law currently, when this one goes to court, the court is told, the jury is told, gross charges were $100,000. In this one, the jury right now under today's law is told that the gross charges are $100,000, but the jury is also told that they paid it off for $30,000. Okay? So this is the difference. Now, under the bill, they would no longer tell the jury about the $100,000 in the case of the person.
Just the $30,000.
They're only going to tell the $30,000.
So then, but then in that scenario, wouldn't the jury then assume that much less of an injury or something had occurred?
Well, okay, let me just go on. Now, I put
Please.
On your desk a couple of articles about anchoring.
Right.
Anchoring is a well-known phenomenon that has been studied. And here's an article, Measures of Anchoring, and this comes from Princeton and UC Berkeley. I mean, we're not talking, you know, a fly-by-night institution here. And if you turn to the second page, you'll see this section that says Measures of Anchoring. And the first sentence says, anchoring effects are generally believed to be large and reliable. Now, look at the second one, the second packet, the big one here.
All right.
Okay, now this thing defines anchoring. It's actually three articles that I just put together and distributed. I'd like you to turn a little past the middle of this big one, and you'll come to a page that says 7 of 17. Okay?
Give me a minute to get there.
Yeah, you're right there. 7 of 17.
There we go.
Okay, there you go.
That's
now, at the top of the page 7 of 17 is a big old study. It's talking about a study that was done at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And it describes the study. And by the way, you can look this up online. But basically what they did here, just to show the effects of the difference of anchoring, what they did was they showed an item. And they give the example of a trackball. And so they told, you know, made the trackball, you know, sounded attractive, described it. Then they had the students in the study write down their social security number, the last two digits, as if it were a price for the trackball. So it says that if their last two digits were 88, they would write down $88. And if the last two digits were 12, they'd write down $12. Then, after just doing that, that's all they did, they had the student bid for how much they would pay for the trackball. And it turned out that if you had a high number of the last two digits of your Social Security number, you would be willing to pay as much as 346% more for the trackball than if you had a low number. And so people with numbers from 80 to 99 paid on average $26, while those with 00 to 19 paid around $9. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, now this is just an example of anchoring and how big of an effect it has. So now, Senator, I want you to think about Senate Bill 31 and our courts. So I know that the senator from Barton is trying to make it so that when they calculate the economic damages, that it's more fair. But I want you to remember, Senator, that right now the court gets to hear both numbers if you have insurance. But if we pass Senate Bill 31 as it's written, they're only going to get to hear the lower number, and you have now got two identical situations where the jury is anchored at a high number on the one where the person has no insurance and at a low number on the other, because the jury really doesn't have any other basis to assess, you know, like, how much is that worth? You know, when they calculate the non-economic damages. I mean, I'm not so much worried about the economic damages. They're going to get paid.
Right. They are the fixed
cost. That's the cost of the medical care, your future medicals, all that stuff.
Sure.
But I'm concerned about the jury when they calculate the non-economic damages. That's where the money is. That's your pain and suffering. That's what you get to compensate you for what happened. I mean, you don't get to keep the money that they pay you for your medical bills. In fact, your lawyer's probably going to take a chunk of it, you know? So the non-economic damages is what's really important here. And if you've anchored the jury in the one case way up here and way down here in the other case, that's not fair. That's not just. That's not what we should be doing for the people of Missouri here. We need a better solution. And it isn't Senate Bill 31. And so I guess what I'm asking you to do, Senator, is I want you to think about, before you vote on this bill tonight, I want you to think about what it means and how this bill is going to affect the people of Missouri. And I want you to be able to sleep tonight after you vote. And I want to be able to sleep tonight after I go home. So I feel that this is so important that I want to talk about it.
I'm happy to keep talking about it with you, Senator.
Thank you for listening.
I agree. I think this is an important thing to decide. We seem to be going down this path, and we can argue the pluses and minuses, but we keep seem to go down this path where we're trying to limit the jurors' ability to decide things on their own, and as a society we are supposed to guarantee the right to a trial by jury, and we keep coming up with different ways to limit their ability to do what they're supposed to do, decide innocence or guilt, or to decide pain and suffering, and I think that's a slippery slope to go down, and I think it hurts the citizenry.
Well, at least I just want to make sure that you understand my concern. I mean, it's based upon real science. I mean, we're not talking, you know, fly by night, you know, junk science. We're talking about MIT, Berkeley, Princeton. You know, so thank you for the inquiry. I really appreciate it, Mr. President.
You're welcome.
Senator from Buchanan.
If I could inquire the Senator from the 5th.
Senator from the 5th. I do not see the Senator from the 5th in the chamber. Sergeant-at-Arms, could you please summon the Senator from the 5th?
He'll get his turn.
Senator from the 5th, do you yield to inquiry by the senator from Buchanan?
Briefly, yes.
Proceed.
Oh, I'm not worried. Senator, thank you for taking my inquiry. Have you been listening to any of the debate so far?
Senator, to be honest, I have not.
Okay. I suspected that might be the case. So would it be okay with you if we talk about the bill before us? A little bit?
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, Senator, the situation is right now, and this is really important for your constituents and for the people of Missouri. Right now, under the law, if you have two people that get injured, so can you imagine, Senator, two people that they both, say, fall off the same ski lift or get hit by the same truck or something. They have identical injuries, two people. And they both go to the hospital and they get the same exact treatment and they both have the same gross charges. Let's just say the charges are $100,000 to take care of them. But now the difference between the two people is that one person has no insurance. And so their gross charges are $100,000. The other person, they have insurance, and their gross charges are also $100,000, same exact injuries, but their insurance company paid, say, $30,000. Okay? So these are the two people.
So why wouldn't the insurance pay full amount?
Well, this person is going to have to pay the
full. I mean, the one with the insurance, not the one without.
Right, this person has insurance.
Right.
And so the insurance company paid $30,000, and that's how much they paid.
Okay.
Okay, now, as it is, if they go to court, in the case of the person with no insurance, they're going to tell the jury the gross charges were $100,000. Okay? And then the jury is going to calculate how much to pay them for their medical expenses, and then they're going to calculate the non-economic damages, the pain and suffering.
Okay, right.
Okay, now, in this case, right now, under the current law, they're going to tell them that it's $100,000 for the gross charges, and they're going to also tell the jury that they settled for $30,000 under the insurance.
What about the non-economical damages?
Well, the jury then is going to hear that. They're going to calculate the medical expenses and how much to pay, and then they're going to also calculate the non-economic damages, the pain and suffering. Okay, now, under the bill, they are no longer going to tell the jury, in the case of somebody who has insurance, the $100,000 number. This is what the bill does. It says you only get to tell them the $30,000 number if you got insurance. If you don't have insurance, they get told $100,000. Okay?
Well, that doesn't sound right.
Well, it doesn't sound right, does it?
It doesn't sound right at all.
Okay.
Logically, now, that doesn't sound right.
I think that you have some intuition, Senator.
Yes, because if you act basically saying that you have to pay more without insurance.
Well,
and you pay less.
Right. Now, here's the thing. On
your desk, less.
On your desk, I've put a couple of articles about anchoring. Do you see them?
Yeah.
This. Okay. The first one is the one that says measures of anchoring. Do you see that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. On the second page, I just want to draw your attention to the second page. Right under where it says measures of anchoring, it says anchoring effects are generally believed to be large and reliable. And this is a study that came from UC Berkeley and Princeton University. I mean, we're not talking junk science here. We're talking, this is the real thing. This is, you know, a very reputable university. Okay, now, if I could draw your attention to the second one. Now, what is anchoring, by the way? Anchoring is when we give you a number,
the estimation,
and you make a decision based upon that number. Like, for example, here was an example from this article. In fact, you can take all the time in the world when I'm done inquiring of you, Senator, and read this, but let's just say that you go to a clothing store and there's a jacket, and you put the jacket on and you like the jacket, and there's a tag hanging out and it says $1,000. Okay? You've now been anchored to that number. So the clothing store person comes up to you and says, you know, this jacket is on sale today for $400. Well, you know, it turns out that if it had the tag on there that said $1,000, you are much more likely to pay $400 for that jacket than if the jacket said $400. Because you've been anchored to the $1,000 number and your brain is just naturally thinking, you're saving $600 there. You see? And that's what anchoring is. So what I'd like you to do now, if you would do this for me, you know the second packet of papers, the big one?
Okay,
turn to about the middle, a little past the middle, and there's an article and it says page 7 of 17. Would you look through there until you come to page 7 of 17, a little past the middle?
Okay. I'm there.
Okay. Well, now on the upper half of that page is the description of a study that was done at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. You know, this is one of the top five universities in America. And basically what they did was they took an object like a cordless trackball and they described it, and then they had the students just write down the last two numbers of their Social Security number,
yeah,
as if it was the price of the trackball. So if the student had the last two digits were 88, they would write down on a sheet of paper $88. And if the last two digits were, say, 15, they would write down $15. Then they had the students bid on how much they'd be willing to pay for the trackball. And it turned out that they differed, the two groups differed by as much as 346%. It says, people with numbers from 80 to 99 paid on average $26 for the trackball, while those with 0 to 19 paid an average around $9. That's a huge difference, just because they were anchored to those numbers by just simply having written them on a piece of paper. Well, now, why is anchoring important here?
That's what I was wanting to say.
Right. It's important because when the two juries decide how much the pain and suffering is worth, how much the non-economic damages are, these are the same exact damages. I mean, people have the same exact
injuries.
Same case. One jury gets anchored at $100,000. The other jury gets anchored at $30,000.
Why is that, though? Why?
Why
is that okay? Once, why is it okay?
It's not two. Okay.
Okay.
No, it's not okay. Gotcha. That's my point. My point is that under the...
why would one even think that that's okay, though?
Well, it's because some people think that when they calculate the economic damages, that juries award too much, more than what they should be awarding, because the person really isn't out that money. I get that. But the problem is, it's the non-economic damages that matters to a person. I mean, the jury's going to give you your medical expenses, but the only thing that you have really to live on then is the non-economic damages. That's what you get to compensate you for the injury. Because the other money is gone. It's going to be gone. You already had that treatment. And so now I think you can see the problem here. And all I'm saying, Senator, is that when you go home tonight and vote on this, you know, after you have vote on this, I want you to know that you did the right thing. Please, just think about it.
Oh, absolutely. No, I concur with you. I think it's unfair for those individuals who may not have the monies to go take it to court.
And I mean,
or
I
have
think
the
that,
insurance to pay.
Right. I just want I want to have a little free and fair discussion so that we can have a little truth around here as to what we're doing. And I would say that the people of Missouri tomorrow would like us to have done the right thing. And creating this inequitable situation, it doesn't seem just to me. So thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you.
Mr. President?
Senator from Buchanan.
I'd like to inquire the senator from Cole.
Senator from Cole. Senator from Cole, the Senator from Buchanan is asking for an inquiry. Do you yield?
I do.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Thank you for taking my inquiry, Senator.
Yes, sir.
I would suspect that you've heard the other inquiries probably since you've been in the chamber a lot of the time.
I've heard bits, yes. I can't tell you I know every inch of them, but I've heard bits and pieces.
But you understand that what this bill does and how it operates. And if you don't, I want to make sure that you do, because it's important. So if I'm telling you something you already know, please feel free to stop me. But right now, under current law, if you have two people, Senator, exactly the same injuries, and they go and they receive exactly the same treatment, exactly the same, and they have exactly the same gross billed charges. So let's just say it's $100,000.
Right.
One person does not have insurance, and the other person does, and the insurance company in this case pays $30,000. Then right now, under current law, when this person goes to court, the jury gets to hear $100,000. That's what they're told. And right now, under current law, when this person who has insurance goes to court, they get told the gross charges are $100,000, and they get told that they settled for $30,000 and paid off the medicals. And under this bill, we're taking away the $100,000 number over here.
I understand.
So that at the end, after we pass this, this person who has no insurance, the jury will get told $100,000. Over here, the jury will get told $30,000, and they won't know the $100,000. And I understand the senator from Barton why he wants to do this, because when they calculate the economic damages, the medicals, he feels that they're overpaying somehow. But you have to know that right now the jury is getting told both numbers.
Right.
Okay, now I put on your desk a couple of articles.
I read some of them.
Yeah,
I stopped reading when it said, when shopping for a car, you know it isn't completely honest. That's when I threw it away.
I wasn't.
Stop reading.
Okay.
See, I did read some of it. I read a couple of them, actually.
Well, but the point that I'm making to you is that this is a real phenomenon. Anchoring, you know that it is, and you know that there are.
Well, I never knew the term, but when you read some of the stuff in there, I understand what they're trying to get at.
Right. Okay, and so what I'm trying to get at is that if we allow this bill to become law, Senator, and you've got two people with identical injuries, the jury is going to get anchored to those two different numbers, And when they calculate the non-economic damages, the pain and suffering, they're going to come up with two different values. And that's not just. That's unjust. And it can be a gigantic difference. I mean, we can be talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so you can have two Missourians with the same injuries. Get the jury would come back with very bad justice. And all I want from you, Senator, I don't want to take a lot of your time. I just want you to understand the point.
I understand that's what you believe.
Well, it's not just what I believe. It's that it's based upon real, genuine, good science.
Well, I mean, okay.
Anyway.
I've read it, but thank you.
Thank you for your time, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
To inquire of the Senator from the 7th.
Senator from the 7th. Senator from the 7th is not in the chamber. Sergeant Arge, when you summons the Senator from the 7th. Senator from the 7th, the Senator from Buchanan is asking for an inquiry. Do you yield?
I do.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Senator, have you been listening to any of the debate that we've been having?
You know, I have. I've been listening, and your inquiry, the Senator from the 4th, the Senator from the 5th.
And the Senator from the
1st.
Senator
from Cole, Senator from the 7th. I'm glad you called me down.
Do you understand that the concept of anchoring is a well-established psychological principle based upon science, and it's not junk science.
Yes, MIT, Princeton, and I heard a couple of them that
MIT, Princeton, UC Berkeley. I've tried to just give an example. There are like 1,000 articles in the literature on anchoring, and I just tried to pick two good handouts that you could look at. Do you understand how the concept of anchoring applies to Senate Bill 31?
Would you care to explain that to me?
Sure.
Thank you.
I want to make sure that before we vote on this bill that's going to change the way our courts work, that everybody understands what's going on. So Senator, you've got two identical people, two people who are injured and they have identical injuries. And so they go and they get treatment, and the treatments are identical. And let's just say that the gross charges for both people are $100,000.
Okay.
One person has no insurance. The other person does have insurance. So their insurance company pays $30,000 for their treatment. Okay?
Okay.
So now, under the current law, when the person with no insurance goes to court, the jury is told it's $100,000 in gross charges for their medical treatment. On the other hand, the person who does have insurance, they're told the $100,000 number for the gross charges, but they're also told that it was paid for $30,000. Okay?
So they got $70,000 left.
Well, no, they're told that the gross charges were $100,000 and that the discount was $70,000 and that they paid $30,000. It was totally paid for.
Okay, so, because because of the insurance arrangement?
Right. The discounts that the insurance company has with all the providers, that's what the jury gets told.
Okay, and now is this strictly medical?
That's strictly for the medical expenses, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, now, under Senate Bill 31, the person who has insurance, their jury would no longer hear the 100,000 number. They would only hear the 30,000 number. Okay?
Sure.
And so now you would have a situation where...
In the correct me if I'm wrong, but the non-economic damages tends to be a multiplier of the
medical
costs.
Now, we've
costs.
Heard testimony from different people. The senator from the second said, oh, there is no formula. But it doesn't matter because there has to be some mechanism that the jury uses to come up with this pain and suffering figure, the non-economic damages. Now, I have put on your desk a couple of articles about the phenomenon of anchoring.
Okay.
Okay, and you said that you had listened to that, and so you know what anchoring is, right?
Well, I don't... Tell me in the...
Well, here would be an example. You tell people... Okay, let's just say you have 1,000 people, and you tell them, write down the number 8. So they all write down the number 8 on the piece of paper. And then you say to them, what percentage of butterflies do you think get hit on the highway every year? And so they're going to give you a number. Now then, the different group of 1,000 people, let's say, you say to them, you say, write down the number 95. And all 1,000 people write down the number 95 on a piece of paper. And then you say to them, what percentage of the butterflies do you think get hit by cars every year? Well, it turns out that there's a big difference between what the two groups will write down in their estimation of the number of butterflies that get hit by cars every year. They have been anchored to the numbers that you gave them and that they will, they will guess wildly different amounts based upon their anchoring. So, I talked, and you probably heard me talk about this example of this study done at MIT, which is in the packet here.
And
it's on page 7 of 17 in that that big packet. And it's a little past the middle.
You say page 7?
Page 7 of 17.
Hold on, I'm looking at the measures of anchoring.
No, look at the other one. Look at the other one. There you go. It just says anchoring on the top of it. They distribute it to your desk. It should be there.
I don't think I'm not seeing that one.
Okay. Well, anyway.
But I trust that if that's what you're showing, okay. that's what
yeah.
it is.
Okay, well, let me just tell you about this study that was done at MIT. It's right, I'll read it to you from mine if you kind of glance back this way.
Yeah.
Because I'll get you a copy of this. It was intended to be on your desk. But anyway, what they did was they took an object, and an example was a cordless trackball. And what they did was they had all the students write down the last two numbers of their Social Security number as if it were the price of the trackball. So if your Social Security number ended in 88, then they would write $88. And if your Social Security number ended in 05, they would write $5.
Okay.
And then what they did was they said, how much would you pay for that trackball? And the answers varied up to 346% based upon what they had first written. So it says that people with numbers from 80 to 99 paid on average $26 for the trackball.
So you're making the case that this is jury manipulation.
The juries are going to get anchored to those two numbers that are totally
arbitrary.
Disparate. And I just want you to see that when they calculate the non-economic damages, that the juries are going to come up with different numbers, and they're going to vary by many, many thousands of dollars in the case that I gave you. And I mean, we're talking about the dispensation of justice here. I mean, this is a big deal for the people of Missouri. And I want to just make sure that you understand.
No, let's talk about motivations for the bill. Why are we trying to pass this if it doesn't help the consumers or the citizens of our state?
Well, the senator from Barton feels that juries tend to give more in the economic damages than they should because they're receiving the wrong number. I mean, they're giving an inflated funny number of money that's not paid in the case of the person with insurance. And that, I mean, I understand his reasoning. I mean, but the unintended side effect of his bill is that when they calculate the non-economic damages, which is the money that he gets to have in his pocket at the end of the day, they're going to be anchored to such different numbers that the justice won't be fair. That's my concern, and I want to make sure you understand why I feel that way.
Okay, so if your contention is today under current law, that if the medical damages were $100,000 and insurance didn't pick up anything, then the jury would be able to see the entirety of the $100,000 and make their determination for non-economic damages based on that number versus just what the insurance company paid, regardless of what the actual costs were because of their discounts.
Right, and right now they get told the same number. They get told the $30,000 and the $100,000. I mean,
right.
They get told the number.
So we're just
it's just that
them.
He's wanting to not tell the jury the $100,000 number. So now you have absolute differential in how the juries are anchored when they calculate their non-economic damages.
So what would be the benefit of denying a jury more information?
I don't think there is here, Senator.
Well, there has to be, because a legislator's not going to file a piece of legislation if there's not some sort of benefit to it.
Well, All I want is that tonight...
Would the benefit be for those who caused the accident if that number wasn't truly revealed to the jury? So is this legislation that is protecting those who are responsible for causing the accident?
Well, it's going to tend to lower the settlement value given to victims who have insurance. And those are the ones that you want to reward, not the ones you want to penalize. But, Senator, I don't want to take a lot more of your time. I think you see the issue very clearly, and that's all I really care about.
You've convinced me I'm going to vote no on this legislation.
Well, thank you, but maybe they could make it better. Thank you, Senator.
Thank
Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
If I could inquire the Senator from the 8th.
Senator from the 8th.
Got up to 8.
Senator from the 8th, not in the chamber. Sergeant Barnes, would you please summon the Senator from the 8th? Senator from the 8th, the Senator from Buchanan is asking for an inquiry. Do you yield?
I do, briefly.
I appreciate that you're busy working on something, but I'm working on something that's important to the people of Missouri, and I'm sure that you would agree that our work here in this chamber is critically important, and sometimes it can be.
I would agree that it's critically important, and I'm out here to try to answer your questions briefly, if at all possible.
Well, I've inquired of several other senators, and I wonder, have you been listening to that at all?
I have not. I've got a reporter that I'm trying to get some answers for and to get back to on that issue, and so no, I have not been listening to your...
Well, that's okay. I want to make sure that you understand the effect of this bill. Do you feel like you have a really good handle on what this bill does?
I'm paying attention to the bill, and I'm not sure that we're at a point where we're going to be closing on it just quite yet.
Well, the thing is that right now under the law, you can have two people with identical injuries. So I just want to describe them.
I've heard from a mutual friend of ours, and I've heard this story from him. So
you understand that they have identical injuries. They have identical treatment, and let's just say they both have gross charges of $100,000. This one has no insurance. This one does have insurance, and the insurance company pays $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so right under current law right now, this one goes to court, and the one who has no insurance, and the jury is told, gross charge of $100,000. Right now, this one goes to court, and the jury is told gross charges of $100,000 and paid $30,000. Okay, that's what they're told now. Under the bill, they would no longer tell the jury on the person with insurance that the gross charges were $100,000. They're just only going to tell them that it was $30,000. That's what the bill does. Okay, now on your desk... I have given you a...
No, but let's back up here. So what is the person with insurance cost out of pocket?
$30,000. Oh, the insurance company.
So you're telling the jury that, hey, this person paid out for the injuries $30,000. And right. The person without insurance, $130,000.
Right.
Okay.
So when they calculate the medical expenses... I don't have any problem with them paying the $30,000 here because it's all going to go for their care. And I don't have any problem with them paying $100 here because it's what's going to go for their care. But the jury, the real thing that you care about when you go to court is the non-economic damages because that's what you have left over. I mean, the treaters are going to get their $100,000 here. They're going to get the $30,000 here.
Wait a minute. But we passed the Affordable Care Act, and everybody has to have insurance now.
Okay, that's not true. I mean, that they're supposed to, but many people don't. But the bottom line of it is, it's the non-economic damages that we care about. And you remember Representative Avery told us that you're prejudicing the jury by not telling the jury this information. Okay, now, I've given you a couple of articles on anchoring. Okay, the first one, you see that one right there?
Yes.
Okay, this is from University of California, Berkeley, and Princeton. And look at the second page. Just the second page. Right there, under measures of anchoring, that first sentence.
That's not the second.
Okay, no.
That's this one.
That article. That article. Measures of anchoring.
Uh-huh.
Look at the second page. I just want you to see the sentence. Anchoring effects are generally believed to be large and reliable. I want you to know that anchoring is a real thing that is a psychological fact that has been studied, studied. And here's an article where they talk about measuring it. But do you understand what anchoring is? Here's an example of anchoring. Just so that you know. You go to the store and there's a jacket. You put on the jacket and there's a tag that says $1,000. And the salesman comes up to you and says, today it's on sale for $400. Well, if that tag says $1,000, you're far more likely to buy the jacket than if the tag says $400. Because if it says $1,000, you've been anchored to the $1,000, and you think that you're getting a $600 bargain. Okay, that's anchoring. This packet, if you pull that up real quick, this packet says anchoring at the top.
I see that.
Turn a little past the middle and go to page 7 of 17. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, now, right here is an article, and this is about a study that was done at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Okay, and so you can look through that, but basically what they did was they took an object, and they give the example of a trackball, a cordless trackball. So they talked about the trackball and how good it was. Then they had the students just write down on a piece of paper the last two digits of their Social Security number. So let's just say that it was 88. They would write down $88 as if that was the price of the trackball.
Okay.
But if their Social Security number ended in, say, 12, they'd write down $12. That's all they did, write that down on a piece of paper. Then they asked the people, after having done that, how much would you pay for that trackball? And it turns out that the results varied up to 300%. If the people had written down between 80 and 99, they would pay an average of $26 for the trackball. But if their numbers were 0 to 19, they would only pay like $9. Okay, so what I'm trying to demonstrate to you with these two articles is that the phenomenon of anchoring is a real deal.
Uh-huh.
The MIT, Princeton, UC Berkeley, they studied it. There's 1,000 articles online. You can look it up.
Uh-huh.
And if we pass Senate Bill number 31...
Right. Senator, I got a question here. Did you bring this up to the senator from Barton?
Yeah, I did. I didn't
did bring you do it before today?
Yes, I talked to him about my concerns.
Okay.
But the point of it is that, and Representative Avery, I know, talked to you.
Yes.
But the point of it is that if we pass this bill, when they calculate the non-economic damages, the important part of the settlement, the jury and the guy with no insurance is going to be anchored at $100,000, and the jury who has insurance is going to be anchored at $30,000, and it leads to an inequitable situation. Can you see that? That's all I want you to do.
I see where you're coming from, and I understand from discussions with Representative Avery the situation we're in. But you talking to me about this isn't solving the problem of changing the bill.
No. The thing about it is I suggested to the senator from Barton as we were, kind of like looked at him and said, maybe we could do kind of a two-step process whereby the jury would calculate the economic damages without being told the gross charges, and then, be told the gross charges and then calculate the non-economic damages. Now you would have an equitable situation. I'm wondering if maybe he might think that might be a good thing. But
you brought that solution up to him?
We're getting there. I have a plan.
It sounds like you've just brought me into you trying to delay to put pressure on others to conform to your line of thinking.
No. You misunderstand yet. What I'm trying to do is to make certain that you know that when you vote on the ultimate bill tonight, that you'll be able to know that you did the right thing for the people in Missouri. So,
okay.
That's it.
Well, I appreciate you bringing me into this discussion.
Thank you, Senator.
All right, thank you.
Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
To inquire of the Senator from Barton.
Senator from Barton, do you yield? Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Thank you. Senator, thank you for taking my inquiry.
You're welcome, Senator.
I have inquired of the senators from the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th.
You're a long ways from 31, Senator.
Well, I have a little ways to go, but I want to talk to you at this point. Because you've listened to my argument now multiple times, and I just am certain that you understand my argument totally.
I do, absolutely.
Would you be willing to maybe make it so that there would be a two-step process?
Let me explain a couple of things to you, Senator, if I might. This is the same argument that, frankly, that we discussed for much of the 13 hours that we were on. I mean, this is exactly the same argument that was brought up again and again and again last year when we debated this bill. You may not have been, you may have been occupied, not been listening to that debate, but it was, this is exactly the argument that was debated over and over again last year, was this difference between insurance and non-insurance.
But I'm talking
but let me,
about
but let me the... tell you also how this typically would happen, because it basically neutralizes that entire argument. Typically, the way this would happen in the trial is that pre-trial, the attorneys would get together. Once this legislation passed, the attorneys would get together. They would agree. All the medical expenses would be laid out, and they would come to an agreement before the magistrate on what medical expenses are. They would come to an agreement that they would basically the defendant would basically say, okay. Agreed to. We have these agreed to expenses, and if we lose, well, whether we lose or not, we will pay. Those expenses have been incurred, and those expenses are what will come in as medical expenses. Now, then it would be up to the plaintiff whether they wanted to bring those numbers before the jury or not. If it was $1,000. They probably wouldn't even enter it as evidence. They would go straight to the non-economic damages. They would argue the non-economic damages. They don't have to bring those numbers before the jury. If they think they're going to hurt their case, they just don't bring them. If it's a very high number, they're probably going to want to bring it. Because they're not ignorant, I don't think, Senator, of exactly the principles that you're portraying. I think it's important for us to understand that this isn't a mathematical formula, that attorneys are involved, clients are involved, the judge is involved, and all of them play their part in this exercise of justice. But once again, what we're dealing with here is something that is not an issue of arbitration, it's an issue of accounting. It's simply the attorneys and get together and they say, yes, we agree, those are the medical bills, those are the medical charges, that's what we will pay. Now let's go to trial. And we'll decide what appeal we make to the jury in terms of an award, but they don't even have to enter that into evidence.
Okay, you're assuming that there is a settlement and that they agree on that, aren't you?
They're in court. This is pre-trial. This is pre-trial stuff.
But that's a big assumption.
And it's not a big assumption, Senator. It's the way these are adjudicated. It's what is going to happen. And I realize it neutralizes your argument, and I understand that. But it does. It simply sets it aside and says, well, that's not an argument, because it doesn't lay out that way. And if the plaintiff's attorney thinks that would be a bad anchor point, he just simply won't bring it before the jury. He'll go straight to the other damages.
Well, I know, but in the case of a person who has no insurance, the attorney will think that's a good anchor point and will anchor it high, right?
Say that again, Senator.
Well, if the person has no insurance and large damages, the plaintiff is going to make darn sure that the jury sees the number.
Well, sure, if he's a good if he's a good attorney, I would think he would.
Okay, so if you have a person with low number by virtue of having insurance, their attorney won't present anything to the jury, right? That's what you're saying.
It's up to the attorney. Whatever he thinks will build his case the best advantage to his client.
Do you not see that you've given a big advantage to the attorney of the man who has no insurance?
Not at all. That's completely up to the attorneys at trial.
Well, but you just admitted to me.
No, I did not. What we're arguing is what's going to happen in the courtroom, Senator. And in the courtroom, this is going to have no relevance.
Well, I absolutely think that it is, because you said yourself that if the person has no insurance and high medical expenses, then that attorney will have an incentive to tell the jury that number.
You are saying that, Senator. I'm just not arguing against that. You are the one saying that. You're the one saying, you're pulling your articles out, and you're saying, this is what's going to happen. I'm saying, okay, fine, if that's what you believe, then this is what I see as playing out in the courtroom. Okay. If the attorneys believe that, they're likely to do exactly what you're describing. If they don't believe that, they probably won't.
Well, The thing is you're creating a system where a person with no insurance is going to have an advantage in court.
You're creating a system where the plaintiff is made whole. That's exactly the purpose of this part of that judgment, is that it is to make the plaintiff whole. It is not to benefit them beyond making whole. Now, in some cases, it will. In the case where they have insurance and have paid for the insurance, and the insurance pays part of the bill. Let's say the insurance pays half the bill. The plaintiff still gets that money, even though he or she didn't pay it.
I know that what you're trying to do is to make the plaintiff whole in the case of their true damages. I mean, the out-of-pocket money. That's how you make them whole. But when you go to calculate the non-economic damages,
that's why the attorneys can decide whether even to enter that information. If they think anything that attorney thinks is harmful, Senator, they are not going to bring before the jury.
Well, is it not true that in the case of no insurance, the attorney will have the option of presenting a bigger number than in the case of...
I have no answer for that, because they will be presenting what is actually spent. It won't be bigger, it won't be smaller, it'll be what's actually
spent. And won't the number be actually lower in the case of the person with insurance?
You're talking about, will a phantom number come in lower than the actual number?
Absolutely.
Probably not. If I were going to enter an artificial number, if I were a plaintiff's attorney and I were going to bring in an artificial number, I'd bring it in as high as I could. I might go to another state and say, you know what, in New Jersey, this would be this much. We ought to give him that award. I mean, if we're using unreal numbers, we can get them wherever we want. We can do whatever we want with
Senator,
them.
Senator, are not the medical expenses lower for a person who has insurance?
Well, no, the medical expenses aren't necessarily lower. Medical expenses are what medical expenses are. Now, the insurance company will pay part of those, which the plaintiff would recover, the insurance part as well as the part that they spent. So,
if you have two people with identical injuries and identical treatment, won't the medical expenses of the person with insurance be lower than the medical expenses of the person without insurance?
Out of their own pocket.
Yeah.
Out of their and the insurance company's pocket.
The amount that you would get to present to the jury.
Yeah, you're talking about if the number that the insurance company says this is an authorized number.
Right.
Yeah.
It'll be lower.
Well, I mean, that's why you have insurance, is because
you hope
that those
numbers are lower.
And that's
exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying that when you go to present that number to the jury.
You don't have to present that number to the jury.
I know you don't have to.
So don't if you don't like it. If you're the attorney, Senator, why would you present a number to the jury that harmed your case?
Okay, listen, I accept that. But, Senator, if you have insurance, your attorney is less likely to want to present that to the jury than if you don't have insurance, because the number will be bigger. You just said.
I don't know how that relates even to the argument that you're making.
Well,
Senator,
the argument
is
that
that number, we're taking the influence.
If your attorney has is allowed to present a bigger number, he's more likely to do it. The court is going to come out with
that number is likely to be settled before you ever come before the jury.
I have to tell you, I totally disagree with you, but you know, I thank you for the inquiry, Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
To inquire of the Senator from the 9th.
Senator from the 9th is not in the chamber. Sergeant Arms, would you summons the Senator from the 9th?
I'm informed that the senator from the 9th is not available to inquire of the senator from Callaway.
Senator from Callaway. It's not in the chamber. Sergeant Arms, you summon the senator from Callaway.
Okay. That's okay. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
Inquire of the senator from Andrew.
Senator from Andrew. Is not in the chamber. Sergeant Arms, would you please summon the senator from Andrew? Senator from Andrew, the senator from Buchanan, is asking for an inquiry of you. Do you yield?
I do, Mr. President.
All right. Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate you taking my inquiry.
Well, good evening, Senator. How are you? So
I'm
you
good.
Wanted to inquire of me.
I appreciate
it. Well, I'm glad that you found me and so we can have an inquiry.
Well,
so what are we inquiring about?
Have you been listening to any of the discussion?
I have been listening to bits and pieces of it, Senator.
Okay. I guess, Senator, I can, very brief if you understand my concern and why I believe it's valid.
Please elaborate in brevity, if you would.
I will. Under this bill, Senator, I believe that it may create an inequitable situation under the law. As our constituents go to court and seek equity, I believe that it's going to create a situation that is going to lead to less justice. And I've been trying to explain this. This
and
evening.
How do you define equity, Senator?
Well, let's just say that we have two people
uh-huh.
with identical injuries and identical treatments for those injuries.
Okay.
And both of them, let's say, have gross medical charges of $100,000.
Gross. That's without any discounts, without without anything. $100,000. Okay.
Okay. They're exactly the same. Now, this person has no insurance, and this person has insurance, and their insurance paid for everything for $30,000.
Okay.
Okay. Well, as it is now, when they go to court, if they go to court and haven't settled it, they go to court, the jury is told in this case the gross charges of $100,000. That's what
in the actual charges are $100,000.
Right, in this case.
What's expected to be paid?
Right. In this case, the jury gets told both numbers. They get told the gross charges and they get told the settled amount, you know, that was
which paid. Which is the actual charges, the discounted amount.
Cost.
Which is actually paid out. Okay.
That's what it is now.
Uh-huh.
Under the bill, if you have insurance, no longer do they get paid, do they get told the $100,000 figure, they only get told the lower number, the $30,000 figure.
Okay.
Okay, so basically what's happened
both
here,
of them are, if found in their favor, both of them will be held whole. They would maybe be made whole. One would be made whole at $100,000. One would be made whole at $30,000. Financially, both would be made whole in that aspect, is what you're
right.
saying.
I okay. don't agree.
So
don't
equitable
disagree.
In that standpoint, so equitability is good there. They both would be made whole.
Right.
Okay.
Now the jury is going to calculate the non-economic damages.
Okay.
The pain and suffering.
Separate thing, okay.
Now you know that when you're made whole, you end up with nothing.
Yeah.
Because the money went to the providers.
Right.
And the amount of money that you get left in your pocket is the non-economic damages, right?
Well, you would pay the being made whole on the actual damages, the cost of the medical part of it. The non-economic damages would be separate from that.
Right.
Pain and suffering be different from that. So, okay, I understand that.
Okay, now, when the jury goes to calculate the non-economic damages, you want it. You don't want a situation where this jury is told $100,000 and this jury is told $30,000 because of the phenomenon of anchoring. And that is what...
You gave some literature on anchoring.
Right. Anchoring is the psychological situation where people's subsequent decisions are made based upon the number that you put into their head. And, you know, I've given this example, which is in that second handout, the big fat one that says anchoring.
Okay.
If you turn a little past the middle of that to where it says page 7 of 17... It describes an article that a study that was done at MIT. And this is a classic example of what anchoring is. And so what they did was, do you see page 7 of 17?
Ooh, yes, page 7 of 17. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I see it now.
At the top of the page, it describes the study that was done at MIT.
Okay.
And basically, they took an object, and in this case, it was a cordless trackball. And they talked about how great the trackball was, and then they just told the students, write down the last two digits of your Social Security number as if it were the price of the trackball. So they give the example, let's just say your Social Security number ended in 88. They would write down $88. And if their Social Security number ended in, say, 12, they would write down $12.
Okay.
And then after that, they would ask the students how much they'd be willing to pay for the trackball. And it turned out that people with numbers from 80 to 99 paid an average of $26 for the trackball, while those with 19 paid around $9, which was up to 346% different. Just from having them write that number down on a piece of paper. And the phenomenon of anchoring is something that's very well known. In fact, the senator from St. Francois was talking about how he learned about it when he was in management school.
Okay.
And if we allow a situation where these two people go to court and the jury in the one case is told $100,000, and the jury in the other case is told $30,000, when they go and calculate the non-economic damages, the part that you actually have left in your pocket at the end, it's going to differ by much, hundreds of thousands maybe. And that creates injustice. And, Senator, the only reason that I'm inquiring of you, because I'm not trying to stop the vote on this bill.
Okay.
I'm just that tonight when you go home,
looks
having
like
voted
I need to do
this,
some reading, doesn't it?
Yeah. Tonight when you go home, I want you to understand how the effect of anchoring makes this bill not so good on the people of Missouri. And if you just understand my argument, that's all I'm asking.
Sure, thank you for presenting that and giving me some information, some light reading to do tonight.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
If I could inquire the Senator from the 13th.
Senator from 13th. Senator from 13th is not in the chamber. Oh, Senator 13th. You are in the chamber. Senator from the 13th, Senator from Buchanan is asking if you yield for an inquiry. Do you yield?
In 1 second, Mr. President. Yes.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Thank you.
Second is up.
Thank you, Senator. You've been listening to my discussions for quite a while. I think you probably understand completely why I
hate to make you walk through this again, but this little thing is amazing. I have balanced my checkbook. I have paid my bills. I may have heard you, but I don't know that I was listening to you.
That's
does
okay.
That make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Because I understand, Senator, right now, under the law, if you have two identical people, two people who have identical injuries.
Okay.
And they receive the same exact treatment.
Okay.
And so they receive the same medical bills. The gross charges, let's say, are $100,000.
Okay.
Okay. This person has no insurance, so their gross charges are $100,000. This person has insurance, but their insurance company only paid $30,000.
Okay,
and that paid off the bill.
So, and whoever was charging the bill is going to settle for $30,000.
Well, that's what their insurance company wrote the check for to pay
for
off
the 70.
Yeah, $30,000. They discounted it by $70,000.
I see. So, yeah, they accepted the 30 as opposed to the 70.
So, under the current law, when they go to court, let's just say they can't settle. They go to court. In this case, the jury is told that the damages are $100,000. Okay? They don't have any insurance, and that's what the charges were. In this case, the person who has insurance, the jury is told the $100,000 number and is also told the $30,000 number. Okay, that's the current law. But under Senate Bill 31, the jury would no longer be allowed to know the $100,000 number. They would only be told what the actual cost was, the $30,000. And when they go and they pay the medical expenses, this person will get their medical expenses paid, and this person will get their medical expenses paid. But when they go to calculate the pain and suffering or the non-economic damages, this jury will have the information that it was $100,000 for their medicals, but this jury will only be told of the $30,000 number.
Okay, now, I did hear that, and I have a question about that for you, okay? So what you're telling me is then they're going to base the settlement for the person that only the pain and suffering, loss of wages on that. They're going to base that settlement on the $30,000 amount and say...
Not the lost wages. Lost wages they'll calculate separately.
Okay. Well, anything that's calculated that the jury might award to this individual are going to base that on a $30,000 amount and say you're really not...
Well, this is the question. If you're sitting on a jury, how do you decide how much pain and suffering money they should get? How much non-economic damages? I mean, how do you decide? Well, the answer is you're going to use whatever information you can. You're going to list... In this case, the jury is going to hear it was $100,000 worth of medicals.
Right.
In this case, they're going to only hear it was only $30,000.
So that's my question. They're going to think this guy isn't hurt as bad.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, now you heard me talk multiple times, didn't you, about anchoring? Have you heard me?
I heard the phrase.
Do you understand the idea of anchoring and what we're doing here?
I think I do. I think what they're doing is they're putting, they're hearing the first sound they're hearing, they're putting that in their head, and they keep going back to that.
Yeah, if you allow the jury to hear the number 100,000 here, but they hear 30,000 here, the juries are going to come back with different numbers for the pain and suffering, the non-economic damages in the case. And that's not just. That's like totally unjust. I mean, basically what you're doing is you're rewarding the person who has no insurance, and you're costing the person who has insurance. And that's not right. I mean, they have the same exact injuries. That was a given. And
I agree with you, Senator.
And so I guess what I'm saying is, like, I had former Representative Jim Avery come and explain this to me. And he said, you're prejudicing the jury. Well, in fact, there's a lot of science behind this. This business of anchoring is a real deal. And that is what you're doing to this jury. You're anchoring them to these two numbers. And I think it'd be better to give them both pieces of information than to just only give them the lower number, because when they go in and calculate...
Which, that's current law, right?
Yeah.
If they see both.
Right,
yeah.
Now they get both numbers. Like, and I'd be willing to say, go ahead and calculate their economic damages and then come back and give them that number and let them calculate the non-economic damages. But, I mean, it just isn't right to do this. What we're doing here, this just isn't right.
No, we're penalizing people for having insurance, doing the right thing, and...
Senator, I think you see my point. You know, think about it before you vote. That's all I'm asking you to
do. I'll do that. Right?
Thank you for the year.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. President.
Senator from Buchanan.
To inquire the Senator from the Ninth.
Senator from the Ninth, do you yield to an inquiry from Senator from Buchanan?
I do.
Senator from Buchanan, you may proceed.
Hey, thank you for taking my inquiry. You heard my inquiry of the senator from the 13th.
I did.
And do you understand my argument, and do you understand why anchoring will influence and prejudice the juries in these two cases?
I do.
Okay.
It does. It sets a bias. I think the amount or total of damages that folks are able to hear per case, would certainly lead, if they were different, to inequities in their judgment on what they thought that case was worth. And I certainly would feel the same way. If I happened to be a member of a jury and I knew that I had someone that had come in, or they happened to be a plaintiff and I knew they had $100,000 in medical bills, I associate that with $100,000 worth of injury.
You're exactly right.
Right.
And so I don't need to take any more of your time. I just wanted to make sure that you understood what this bill does, how it operates, and why it has a flaw, and that will hurt the people of Missouri.
Right, I agree there. And I also, and I don't know if this has, what is this, I guess I'm wondering the effect also in settlement cases. Is this just in court cases? Does that, of course, parlay into settlement cases as well? Because I think that...
No, I mean, and the senator from Barton was talking about if they settle... They do that all outside of court. They can do whatever they want to settle.
But it's the same premonition, though. If you've ever had an accident, a lot of times they base the amount that the insurance company will give you is sort of based on your medical bills. It doesn't necessarily have to be dollar for dollar, but clearly the amount of the bills determines pretty much, I'm sure, what they would be willing to offer or settle for, or what the juries, of course, might be biased towards and, you know, an award in a case, too. So I get it. I agree with you 100%.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to make sure that you understood before you voted on this bill, because, you know, this is going to affect a lot of people's lives.
I agree.
People get injured. They go to court. They need to be able to get equity. I mean, they need to have justice. And I can see how this is creating an unjust situation.
Well, and in this case, too, if it's the insurance companies that are paying the bills, of course, it's going to be the insurance companies that win. It's not necessarily going to be the plaintiff, the person that was harmed, or it's not going to be the defendant, the person that actually caused the harm. It's going to be the insurance companies, of course, that win. And unfortunate when you have people that have had injuries and other type of who have been harmed in some way to not be, compensated in a way that would be fair with their injury.
Thank you for the inquiry, Senator.
Welcome.
I appreciate it. Mr. President?
Senator from Barton, or I'm sorry, Senator from Buchanan was up on his feet first and asked for recognition.
I think he was seeking recognition over the top of me. Like,
Senator from Barton.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you please lay this bill on the calendar?
This bill will be placed in formal calendar. Senator from the second, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of announcements. Announcements. Hearing none, Senator from the second.
Mr. President, no further business coming before the body. I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 2 p.m. Wednesday, February 1st, 2017.
Senator from the second moves that the Senate stay adjourned till till 2 p.m. on Wednesday, February the 1st. All those in favor of that motion, say aye. All those opposed, say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. We are adjourned till 2 p.m. February the 1st, Wednesday.